The reasons that people decide to work with children and youth are many. Some of us are drawn by religious convictions, others by less formalized, but no less passionate, spiritual convictions. Some of us have personal experience within the child and youth care systems ourselves, growing up in group homes, watching a sibling struggle, or caring for a parent who had challenges caring for us. Some of us come into this field because we were inspired by role models we had, others because we wanted to be different from the anti-models we experienced. Many people find building relationships with the young people and supporting their growth rewarding and inspiring. I suspect most of us choose to stay in this field, at least somewhat, because of what it gives us. While we are not here primarily for ourselves, those who find meaning in their work are much more likely to stay in their work. Effective child and youth care providers care deeply about the young people we work with. Indeed, this is what makes us effective in our work. This care, passion, love, and commitment is all related to self. And self is where I want to begin our conversation today with Michael Burns, a practitioner, educator, and author of 6 books, most recently, The Self in Child and Youth Care, A Celebration. Welcome, Michael Burns.
Good morning, Wolfgang. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good.
What brought you into this work, Michael?
Interesting story. I, as a youngster growing up, came from a large family, got into high school, and high school didn't really do it for me. But the part about high school was basketball. So I repeated grade 12 3 times just to play basketball, and then ended up on the street in Toronto. After about a 3-year stint on the street in Toronto as a young person, I went back to my hometown, got involved in the community college, and once again, education just didn't really turn me on. Then I got into carpentry, met a young woman and married her, and just before the birth of our first son, Dan, my wife was at that time an ECE grad, working for a children's mental health center, and I was asked to come out and volunteer at camp, which I was more than happy to do. Love kids, always had a passion for working with kids and being with kids, but never really the opportunity. And so I spent a 3-week camp with the kids, took a holiday from my job, and as a result of that, the camp director said, "You would make a great child and youth worker." At the time, I didn't feel I was intelligent enough. That was one of the reasons that I dropped out of community college. I just didn't think I was smart enough. And so with a lot of encouragement from my wife and from the camp director, I applied for a position, was awarded a full-time position, and they supported me going back to community college, getting my 3-year child and youth worker diploma at St. Clair College in Windsor. I got involved with a team of incredible people who were on the cutting edge of child and youth work and child psychology at the time. They embraced me and taught me so much.
So when you speak about self, you've really done the journey of following your passions and your commitment in your work.
Yeah, certainly that opened a huge door for me, that opportunity. And one of the requirements of that particular position, I was working as a child and youth worker for children's mental health, was that I had to do my own work on myself. I was required to meet with a counselor, eventually get into group work, and for about 2 years, some fairly extensive work on who I was as a person, some of the baggage that I was bringing into the position, and most importantly, my strengths and the areas that I needed to continue to use and to use to support the other aspects of my personality. So I had a 2-year intensive work on the self, and luckily, as I look back, that was a requirement. It was not an option. You were required to do that, which isn't always the case.
Why do you think that it's unfortunate young people in this field are not required to do their own work?
I think they're frightened, as I was. I think they're worried that it's going to uncover all sorts of very difficult, very unmanageable information or emotions. And the reality I found in many cases when I was in private practice, that the client or child and youth worker says, really? This is what counseling's about? This is looking at the self? I always thought it was dragging up all my terrible habits and so on. And no, it's the most rewarding experience I've ever had, because it allowed me to then function more as me, Michael Burns, than as how I was told or how I thought the rest of the world ought to have me act, or I ought to act.
You make an interesting distinction between dredging up the past, looking at those scary pieces of ourselves, and what you said was most important in your journey was looking at your strength. Why do you think focusing on strength is more important than understanding our pain and suffering and our difficult past?
Yeah, I didn't mean to give anyone the impression that that isn't going to be part of the journey. For me, I didn't know what my strengths were. Like I said earlier, I didn't think I was intelligent. I didn't think I would ever make an academic. I don't think I wanted to teach school. I wanted to be a school teacher. I just thought, there's no way. I'm not smart enough. I'm not disciplined enough. And this journey that I was required to take allowed me to begin to see, hey, you've got a great deal of skill. There are many areas, a huge potential for you to grow in. And eventually I did have to look at, I was raised in a very problematic family. There was all sorts of unhealthy things going on in my family as I grew up. And I absolutely had to wrestle with those demons. But I was able to do that with the knowledge that I'm strong, I'm capable, I'm intelligent, I have support, I have friends. That was sort of, as I mentioned earlier, almost anticlimactic when I came to have to wrestle with some of the things that had gone on in my childhood. It was nothing as to what I had expected it would be like.
That the strengths were a more powerful learning for you than confronting those demons.
Yeah, it was almost a vehicle to confronting those demons. It was inspiration, it was hope, it was drive. And that allowed me to confront those demons. And these are some fairly heavy demons. Able to do that, again, with the strength and support of others, but also the knowledge of who I am and what I can do.
Who I am and what I can do. I think that's really at the core of this work. Perhaps to contextualize listeners, you could define a little bit for us. When we talk about self, what are we talking about?
Yeah, that's always rather nebulous at some point, and at another point, it's as simple as we're talking about you. One of the many things about self is the complexity of the human experience, of the complexity of who you are, Wolfgang, who the students are, who I am. It's such a complex question. There's no simple answer. So what I did in the book was I tried to divide the self up into various areas, and you really can't dissect yourself because so many of those areas, physical, social, emotional, spiritual, and so on, so many of those areas overlap. The complexity is enormous. What we're talking about is who you are as a man, who you are as a brother, who you are as a father, son, and on and on and on. We're talking about the whole entire you, much of which you haven't met yet, or familiarized yourself with, or been formally introduced to. So there are parts of all of us that are blinded to us for many reasons. And so the self includes what we know about ourselves and our abilities and what we don't know about ourselves and our abilities. And that's the piece that I was hoping that the text will address, is those parts of you that you're not really that familiar with or not comfortable with or not friends with, that are aspects of you, your personality, your being. If you can bring those into connection with all the other parts of yourself that you know and are very comfortable with, that creates a much more balanced self. So Carl Jung has a very, very complex and extremely interesting breakdown of the self. And my breakdown of the self is we're talking about you, who you are in all aspects of the self, those that are known to you and those that are yet to be discovered.
And this book provides you use the metaphor of a journey in the book, which I think is quite apt. Rather than a book about the self, it's a book to allow us to learn who we are. And you've chosen to use the structure of a workbook. Why did you choose to use the structure of a workbook?
Because it's such a personal journey, I felt there needed to be a record of the journey, and therefore the book, a journal, helps you keep a record. I'm hoping in the future to have it up in a more technical format where students can do it online as well. But for now, I felt it was important to have a record of the journey that the student can go back on over the 3 years or 2 years that the student works on this particular project of getting to know who they are, and to allow the student to do it step by step and to stop at any point for rest, or to be invigorated, or to be able to sort of push forward and go at their own pace. So really looking at something that's self-directed, that the student can pace his or her work. Now that's obviously going to have some parameters as educators use it, but first and foremost was that we now have a record of the journey, which can be useful. I started keeping journals when I was an altar boy, age 8, and have all my journals at home. And it's amazing to go back on and sort of look at the journey and be able to see what affected me as an 8-year-old and what affected me as a 15-year-old and how that whole process has happened. So I thought having a record was extremely helpful. And the other part of it is to learn about who you are. You're the expert. We, as educators, can only be a guide. And I wanted to be as less direct of a guide as I could. And so I wanted to keep the questions open. So you might interpret a question differently than someone else. You interpret it from your self-perspective. And the other piece is that I wanted it to be a time-honored process. That it wasn't something that, I'll get to know myself in semester 3. No, this, and many of you have already started the journey, this is part of the journey, but hopefully a very intensive part, that you can move yourself from self-care right to self-actualization.
There's a couple questions that come out of that. One question is around the learners, and the second question is around the educators. And I also want to say that you invited me in to read some of the early drafts, and I found it quite illuminating for myself. I've been doing work on myself, like you, for decades now. I was confronted with questions that really made me stop and think about the choices that I make and how this might influence me. So you talk about students a lot, and certainly I think it's an excellent tool for students. I would also encourage educators or professionals working in the field to take a look at the book, because I think it has a lot to offer us at any point in our journey. Let's talk about educators for a moment. How can we, as educators, those of us who are, support people using the workbook in a formal educational context?
This project has been going on for about 10 years. So I've been constantly adjusting it and working it as an educator. But also every year of those 10 years getting feedback from the students in terms of how I can make it more adaptable, easier, more comfortable, more useful for them. And you, Wolfgang, had a big part in this, is how do I make it less frightening for me to be able to do this? One of the things that I encourage educators to do is, and I mentioned it in the book as far as the students go, is that even though we have a written documentation of all my personal experiences, I need to know that you're not going to read my journal unless I would like you to do that. And so I set up process in the book where students can do a summary of what they've done in their journal. So I think it's important that educators, even though in many cases we really like you guys and would really like to know more about you, that we honor the fact that this is very important information and personal information, and so that there be some sort of assurance for every student that this is not something that is going to be used or read, that the educator is going to support me in the process, but not necessarily know my deep, dark secrets.
And the person going through that journey, writing these secrets out, these difficult things out, you start the book with self-care, and it becomes very apparent that you think this whole journey needs to be grounded in self-care. What thoughts do you have for students or others beginning this journey about how to use this book most effectively?
In terms of self-care, when I started in child and youth care, the average life of a child and youth worker was about 2 years. As some of you as students are beginning to appreciate, and Wolfgang, you and I know intimately, it's an extremely stressful situation to be in, involved with children who are under serious stress, who have been brutalized, traumatized, and so on. To be able to manage all that pain and to stay clean and able to help the other individual, that's the issue. How do I stay well enough to help the individual who's in front of me most needing my help? And so how do I learn to take care of myself? Well, I already know how to take care of myself. Well, some of us do and some don't. Most of us as caregivers see ourselves as last, and we take care of others first and sometimes don't take care of ourselves as well as we ought to. Sheridan College is doing an interesting thing. They're having the... they're posting the self-care graph online, and so students will continually do a self-care analysis every 6 to 8 months to see how those skills are developing. I burned out after year 11 because I was under extreme stress in the workplace and wasn't able to manage it all that well. Took a year off, did 9 months in counseling, and appreciated that I had a choice to make. I could either continue in the field and be extremely effective, or I could continue in the field and not be effective, or I could leave the field. And my clinician at the time was helped me appreciate that unless you are at 100%, you are doing a disservice to your client, to your child, to the family, to the people that you're working with. You need to be well to help these people on this journey. So the self-care, which, as you know, is ongoing, is something we have to continually take care of ourselves first. Like in the emergency, the doctor is supposed to take his pulse first in an emergency situation. That's sort of what I'm saying. We need to always be looking after ourselves so we can help other people. Now, you're going to have to steer me back on to the rest of your question.
The other part of the question was, as people embark on this journey, do you have any thoughts or recommendations? And you give some really solid suggestions at the beginning of the book. Any thoughts or recommendations about people who perhaps are reluctant to begin this process or begin this journey to help them?
Okay. First of all, I would say listen to that reluctance. Honor it. And say, okay, I'm not ready right now. Some of you will dive into this head first and absolutely love it. Others of you will be very reluctant. And for some of you, it's just not your style. And you'll have to find, well, you will choose to find a way to make it work with your style. The focus is for you to enjoy your life and, most importantly, your profession, and to do it with relative ease and certainly with pleasure.
One of the things that helps people get ready sometimes is understanding what the purpose of the journey is. What's the end result? And early in the book, you give several examples of how past might influence our work with young people. Can you think of any situations that you've encountered exemplifying how understanding self can influence our work with children and youth?
The classic one for me is when you sit down in front of a child, youth, parent, who has had very similar experiences to yours. What often happens then is that there's a connection, there's identification with the individual, which is healthy at some level. However, if there's parts of yourself that you haven't addressed, that's part of the package. When I connect with a child, he gets the whole package. He gets the parts of me that I've worked on and the parts that I haven't worked on. I have experienced over 30-some-odd years, children, families, parents, coming out of experiences with child and youth workers and other professionals, and having more baggage and more pain than they did when they walked in the door. Sometimes some of us develop needs, and we don't get those needs met in our personal lives. We get them met in our professional lives. And so when we have our children and youth meeting our needs, there's something wrong there. It's supposed to be the reverse. So in a general, and I haven't got specific yet, generally, it's often that individual who's a lot like you that you connect with very closely. However, if there are parts of your experiences, personality, or self that you haven't wrestled with, they are in the relationship. So that's the danger.
You use a couple of examples, Daphne, Ed, early in the book,
right,
of people who discover their strengths. And Daphne is a great example of a young woman who discovered her passion for music after being traumatized as a child. And she discovers her passion for music and then uses that to work with young people and studies music therapy. That idea that we uncover strengths that we can then bring to others is perhaps the most inspiring motivation for me in this book. How do we develop these strengths and catalyze these strengths?
Yeah, I think first of all is the discovery piece. And I think we could take any one of your abilities or talents and we can make it work and fit into the field of child and youth care. Basketball, for example. I played basketball for years as a young man and teenager. One of the most effective ways that I work and have worked with conduct disorder kids is we just shoot baskets and we talk. It can be any part of you, who you are, any ability that you're looking at, that you're cultivating, or something that you are talented in, but you're not bringing into the field. Those are the types of things that you need to, or that you can decide to alter and change and bring into the system that not only connects the individual, but it's an expression of who you are. So now the child gets to know, and this is also part of the process, particularly in this field, it's not so much in the other field, is that the child gets to know us almost as well as we get to know them.
And really what you're discussing here is use of self. So how do we bring our strengths to our work in a relational way, shooting hoops with the young person, playing music, be it at the campfire or wherever it might be.
Right.
You talked about the young people getting to know us, and that shifts us into what we call relational work, and many, many writers have talked about the foundation of child and youth care, child and youth work, is relational, and the two selves coming together to make this other, this relationship that facilitates the growth in the individual. There seems to be increasing discussions in child and youth care around boundaries when working with children and youth, and that's certainly something that comes up a lot. The old paradigms of, you know, rigid being too distant from young people and entangled being too tied with young people, it seems to be shifting with cell phones, with texting, with Facebook. And I've spoken with many young people who say the most effective youth workers I've had bend, stretched, or even broke those, what we think of as appropriate boundaries. how does knowing self help us understand where we draw the line with boundaries in a healthy way?
There's two boundaries. There's a professional boundary and there's a personal boundary. And so I think part of us is the field is wrestling with that. How much is personal? How much is professional? And where do the two meet? The professional boundary for me must be guided by ethics, must be guided by a certain appreciation that we all can live with, is that this is where the boundary is. This whole movement, the social connection movement, Facebook and so on, as you mentioned, has really opened up things that none of us ever imagined would be opened up. And not only, not just our profession, the entire population, particularly North Americans and the world, basically, now there's these intimate social connections all over the place. And where does child and youth work fit in there? So there's the personal and the professional. I have to be the professional, but lean towards the personal. What is comfortable for me, respecting the professional boundary, what's comfortable for me in sharing with this individual as I get to know him or her better? Because if you start to feel that you need to become this open book or start to divulge all sorts of parts of yourself, that isn't the intent either. The intent is for you to be you, to be relaxed and comfortable and present. As Mark Krieger talks about, that sense of presence, being with the child, nowhere else but with the child. And so I think we need the profession to dictate the absolute edges of the boundary and for us to be able to interpret where we as an individual fit within those boundaries. Touch has been the big one for many, many years. I was fortunate enough to be at the beginning, in the middle, and sort of where we're at now in terms of physical touch. Still a quandary for many institutions and professions. So that's been a struggle, but I think it's basically part of the struggle. The other part of the struggle is much more powerful, and that's the psychological, emotional connection that happens. And what are the boundaries in those particular instances? Do I let a child, do I become so close to the child and allow the child to become so close to me, knowing that they're only going to be in this facility for 3 months? For 6 months, for a year? How do I gauge that? And do I need to gauge that? Is that something that I need to be aware of, that I make a strong attachment and now this child has to deal with termination? How strong should the attachment be? Those are questions that we'll have to continually ask ourselves. Some people will say, hey, that attachment can be as intimate or close as it wants to be in the moment. Or no, you need to set limits around that, the psychological, emotional connection. So interesting stuff. It's grown, and there's certainly been ebbs and flows over the number of years I've been doing this, and I think we're going to continue to do that, but there appears to be a much stronger consciousness about how those particular types of things affect children. The connections with another individual. Child and youth work often is intimacy, is an intimate connection with these children and youth. We often know more about them and have experienced things more with them than any other individual. And so that's an onerous responsibility, and I think one that we're just going to have to continue to wrestle with.
Yes, indeed. You subtitle your book A Celebration, and I think that over the course of this interview you've really laid out well why the journey of understanding and knowing the self is a celebration, for all the strengths we can bring, for the transformations within ourselves, for the support and the growth of the young people we work with. I want to thank you very much, Michael Burns, for first of all for writing this book. I hope many people embark upon the journey. And secondarily, thank you for joining us on the podcast today.
You're very welcome, Wolfgang. My message to the students is give it a try. I think you're going to love it. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.